Today, with today's readings, we are actually in that fortunate position of being able to stand, if you like, in the middle of the two readings and look both ways, the before and the after. In the reading from Luke 24, we see the struggle of Jesus' disciples in trying to understand his death and the collapse of their hopes that he was going to be the Messiah, and of getting their heads around what it all meant. What did the empty tomb mean? And then, in reading from Acts, which is at the end of Peter's sermon on the day of Pentecost, we get a glimpse of the change in the disciples in that time, from Jesus' resurrection through the ascension and that day, the first day of Pentecost. They could stand up, Peter could stand up, and explain their own understanding at this moment of what Jesus' death and resurrection meant to the disciples and what it should mean to the Jews who were gathered there to celebrate the festival. And before we get to his last bit, he had been explaining, just as Jesus did to the two on the road to Emmaus, how the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, pointed to the coming of Jesus, pointing to the coming of Messiah, not as victorious one, conquering everything in a visible fighting manner, but as the suffering servant, the suffering Messiah, who died in agony on the cross for us. And because of that, and because of his resurrection, they recognized and believed that Jesus was alive, was their saviour, and was with them. And they could proclaim that. And what is really good about that moment in time is that most of those who were listening to the disciples at that time would probably have been around in Jerusalem for the Passover, would probably have picked up some of the things that happened and recognised that Jesus' death shouldn't have happened probably. So they were receptive and were told that 3,000 became believers, changed their way of living, made sense to them to follow Jesus. And we'd love to be in that situation today in many ways, but we sometimes have to do that preparation. We have to be sure for ourselves what it means to us at this moment in time, and we have to be able to communicate as much as we can with others, to prepare others so that they can respond to the good news of Jesus through his Spirit. Not an easy task sometimes, and we often think, I can't do it. But we've some, haven't we, one more step along the way. And about understanding the world, about walking along in Jesus' footsteps. And so we come to that amazing chapter in Luke's Gospel that wrote, Walk to Emmaus. And I don't know about you, but I get to a stage sometimes at Easter, particularly by the time I get to Easter Sunday, I'm getting very confused as to where all the resurrection appearances happen, who was involved where, because we tend to read bits from all the Gospels. I guess none of you are quite like me. But what I do know is if we try and put them in an order, we can only go so far. Because we always have to remember that the Gospel writers were writing for a particular group of people for particular reasons. So what they shared was for their audience, if you like. In the same way, today, when things are serialized or rewrites, it's there for the civic audience, isn't it? I don't know if any of you have been watching Great Expectations. I haven't, but I have read about it and heard people sort of say, it's not like the book. There's so much in it that's not in the book. But actually, we have to stop and think, who is it there for? It's probably about enabling a group of people to begin to engage with Dickens and his writing and just realise how great his writing was. So it's remembering that Luke was writing towards a group of people, non-Jews to Gentiles, And so he's got things in very, very specific. And what I haven't tweaked, after all these years of reading it umpteen times, was that nowhere in that chapter 24 do we hear, until that walk on Emmaus, that anyone had actually seen Jesus. It's quite interesting. I mean, we don't know where he, he's writing for a particular group of people, but I found that really interesting because those two walking on the road, they said that, you know, the women had been to the tomb. It was empty. There were angels there. The men didn't believe it, so they went and had a look, and thought it was true. But they got no further than that. And, you know, that just really blew my mind. And why these two were heading after Jerusalem, we don't know. Perhaps they wanted to escape and go home for a short while. But they were discussing and talking about it, trying to get their heads around it, like we do on some things. And they didn't know how to put it together, how to make sense of it. And I was thinking about that, I was also thinking about this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Because as far as I can make out, at 3 o'clock, the government are going to trial out a new alert system on the phones, on mobile phones. It's meant to be a siren sound for a short while. Even if you've got to switch off, it's going to be vibrating or something, and you can't do anything else until you've acknowledged it. But Richard Leslie and myself were talking about it last Sunday evening, and we tried to work out, and it seems that it only applies to 4G and 5G phones. But hey-ho, who knows? So we had to, I'm still grappling, you know, what's it going to mean? What's it going to sound like? And can I avoid it at 3 o'clock? But it's that thing, isn't it? It's slight unknown. It's not quite sure what's going to happen. And we're not quite sure whether it will affect me and my phone, or if I'm walking along, will I hear other people's? I just don't know. I mean, the idea sounds brilliant, but apparently it's 3 o'clock to avoid the football and the London Marathon. I thought, apparently it's going to be 11 o'clock. I just thought, well, where does worship come into it? So there is that. So they were grappling with it. And the other thing that also tweaked was that when Jesus said, "Why are you so downcast?" they stopped. And Tom Wright translates that part of that story like this. The two of them were going to the village for Emmaus. They were discussing with each other all the various things that had taken place. They were discussing and arguing with each other. Jesus approached and walked with them. Their eyes, though, were prevented from recognizing him. "You're obviously having a very important discussion on your walk," he said. "What's it all about?" They stood like a picture of blue. And one of them answered, "You must be the only person around Jerusalem who doesn't know what's been going on these last few days." And Jesus said, "What things?" But the only person. But actually, you can live in a place, can't you? And you don't always know what's happening. I mean, a few weeks ago, there was that fire in the quarry, wasn't that area? I mean, how many of us were aware that it was happening until we heard it on the news? So you can live somewhere, but not always be aware. And yet, when we're involved, we assume that everybody else knows. But sometimes we have to tell. So he says, "Do of Jesus of Nazareth. He acted with power, spoke with power before God and all people. Chief priests and rulers handed him over to be condemned to death. They crucified him. We were hoping that he was going to redeem Israel. And now it's the third day since it happened. Some women were astonished that the tomb was empty. They didn't find his body. Came back saying they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Some folk went with us to a tomb and found it just as the woman said, but we didn't see him. I love the next bit of translation. As Tom Wright translates it, as Jesus saying, you are so senseless, so slow in your hearts to believe all the things the prophets said to you. Don't you see? This is what had happened to her. Had to happen. Messiah had to suffer and come into his glory. And then he began to explain. But I just sort of felt, yeah, sometimes I just feel like that. So senseless. I just can't get my head around it. Whatever. And then a few days later, a few months later, something clicks. And I think, ah, yes, that's what God's been trying to say to me. And this is where we need to be open to what God is saying to us in unexpected ways, in unexpected places. We have to have open hearts. We can question, we can toss things around, but we need to be open to what God is saying. It might be directly to us, it might be something we sense as we read the Bible, passage something hits us. It might be as we're in church and worshiping, we sense God in some way. And it might be something that other people have said, whether in a conversation, or whether in one of the house groups, or whatever point. Or it might be during the communion service, as we come to the breaking of the bread. But it is an amazing story, isn't it? And Jesus came along beside them, was willing to explain, willing to be with them in that very special way until it clicked. And sometimes Jesus is there alongside us, both as individual and as a church, hinting, encouraging, until it clicks that this is where he wants to go, the next step along the way, the next step along our journey. And what I also love is as they got to the place where these two people were going, it was getting dark. It's that bit about hospitality, inviting somebody in. You can't go further. I'm aware that hospitality in those days was probably a lot easier and more accepted than perhaps sometimes in this day and age, where we might struggle if somebody just came to the door or we chatted to them along the way. Particularly if you're female, particularly if you're living by yourself, but not necessarily, you might sort of think, is it okay or is it not? So there's all sorts of questions, and there's no easy answer. But what I love, when they went in, it wasn't in a special way that they recognised Jesus. It was in a natural way. It was in the sharing of the bread. An everyday thing at meals, the bread was broken and shared with each other who was there. And it was that moment that they recognised who Jesus was. And it was at that moment that he vanished from their sight, but not from being part of them. And sometimes it's in the everyday thing that we see Jesus. And the two brilliant folk got off their backsides. I thought, we must tell others. So they rushed 7 miles back to Jerusalem, which I guess is probably, depending how fast you walk, a couple of hours. If you're really fast walk, it's about an hour and a half, I should think. And said, look, this is what's happened to us. But the disciples there said, they'd answered and rose with them, great, we know he's risen. And they knew he'd risen because he appeared to Peter. And it's the only time, I think we read in the Easter stories, that Jesus had appeared separately somewhere to Peter. And we don't know anymore. You can use your imagination, thinking why. What was the conversation like? We just don't know. So there's all sorts of things going on here. Things that will encourage us in our journey, in our faith. But the other thing I really love when it tweaked was if we go back to the beginning of the Gospel, if we go back to Jesus' birth, who were the first people who were told and came to worship the baby Jesus? It was the shepherds, those who were marginalised. And so Luke is true in his whole gospel to wanting to show that the outsiders, the non-Jews, those who were struggling, were welcomed into the kingdom of God. And it ends with two people who were obviously not part of that inner circle of 11, who Jesus appears to in Luke's gospel, first of all. It's amazing, isn't it? And we need to recognise that sometimes our encouragement comes from people we wouldn't think, from people who are outside. So I just hope and pray that with some of the things that I've said, that you will ponder on them, reflect on them, and read Luke's Gospel, chapter 24, in the light of the fact that Luke was writing to non-Jews, but he was writing, maybe wrote, and that his story is slightly different to others, the others. But yet, the risen Christ is there at the heart of it. And at the end, the disciples, the two people in the room, were rejoicing because Jesus was alive.